This is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Sean Kinnan is taking the day off, so his midpoint program will not be here, but Tom Hartman program will be here. It's usually carried exclusively on our HD3 channel for 3 hours in the afternoon, but we're bringing the first hour over here to our main channel. Tom is based in Portland, Oregon, but he has a national and international audience. People call him from all over the world, so be sure to call him today. This is the Tom Hartman program on 88.5 FM.
Well, happy Monday. Thanksgiving week here is upon us. And the Republican cult just keeps rolling along. I will share my thoughts and a rant about that with you in about 15 minutes. The second hour of our program today, the entire second hour, will be the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Congressman Ro Khanna of California, taking your calls for the hour. He's becoming a real progressive superstar in the House of Representatives. And in our third hour, the entire hour, we're going to have an hour-long conversation with Dr. Jack Bradich. Everything you ever wanted to know, and maybe even didn't want to know, but really should know about the QAnon conspiracy and the whole cult and all that stuff around it. But to start off this hour of this program, our old buddy Greg Palast is on the line with us, the investigative journalist, the author, his latest book, How Trump Stole 2020, something that is still up in the air. Jeez. His website, gregpalast.com. You can tweet him at Greg_Palast. Greg, welcome back to the program. I understand there's some new goings on down in Georgia. Tell us about it.
Oh, my God. The smell of audacity. The Secretary of State has proposed a new rule to stop voter fraud. You know all the voter fraud that they've found in Georgia, but this is really serious stuff. He stuck in a rule, I kid you not, at midnight last night, Georgia time, with a emergency hearing this morning of the Board of Elections to stop, to prevent people from coming into Georgia and voting in the Senate runoff, which is, of course, going to decide everyone's Senate. Now, how are they going to catch these fraudsters? Well, they're going to prevent anyone, any county official, and any elections official in any of the 159 counties can stop anyone from registering. Ready? If you don't have a car registered in Georgia. Now, needing to buy a car to vote, Tom, that's kind of a heavy poll tax. So they can't actually stop you from voting or registering, but they can withhold your registration till they give you a hearing to confirm that you're a Georgian. This is no joke, by the way. They actually pulled this on my
daughter. And the hearings will happen, no doubt, after the election, right?
Yes. Now, understand, that's right. It'll happen after the January 5 election. So understand who's going to be hit here. We are going through a massive registration, re-registration drive, you know, working with the frontline groups like Black Voters Matter. This will hit students, especially like the students in Savannah, and in Atlanta and Athens. How many students have cars? The other is, of course, urban, low-income voters who don't have cars either, who are registering or re-registering. They just happen to be black or, if concerned to the state, blue voters. So students, low-income people, urban people in urban areas use public transportation, that is low-income people. In other words, they literally saying you have to have a car in Georgia to vote. Again, they're not stopping you from registering. They're just going to withhold your registration until after the election. Again, they've pulled this stunt a couple times. Back in 2014, when I first met Stacey Abrams, I met her at the Ebenezer Baptist Church with Reverend Warnock, of all people, because they were concerned that this guy, Brian Kemp, their Secretary of State, had withheld for 6 months, 50,000 new registrants, young voters of color. He withheld their registrations until after a Senate election in 2014. Now they're pulling this stunt again. No other state that I know of does this, by the way. But this is really serious stuff, because it's going to be down to, you know, a handful of votes. It's a blood battle in Georgia right now.
This happened to your daughter, Greg?
Yeah, when she was a Georgia resident, student in Savannah for 4 years, and she tried to register. They said, "Oh, well, wait, you have a New York driver's license registered." She said, "Well, because on summer vacations I drive in New York, but I don't in Savannah, Georgia. Everyone uses bicycles, right?" So they withheld her registration. She had to fight them. So, of course, a lot of her fellow students simply didn't go through the battle to get on the voter rolls. She did, but again, she missed an election, and this is January 5. The cutoff for registration is December 7, but Georgia has a rule that they don't put your name right on the voter rolls. They have to, quote, confirm your residence. This is, and now they're adding this new thing that they can withhold and say your residence isn't confirmed unless you have a car registered. And by the way, it says not only registered, but you will have had to have paid the registration tax. What does this have to do with voting except to knock out students, low-income people, urban people, the blue people?
Right. So this is mind-boggling. Kemp has done this before. How is this going to play out, Greg? I mean, I'm assuming that the NAACP or somebody is launching a legal suit. I mean, there's 2 weeks till the deadline for registration.
You're so telepathic, Tom. I just heard from the ACLU and others and our lawyers because, people have not noticed. Again, this was slipped in at midnight last night. They held hearings this morning, and they decided the Board of Elections at 8 a.m. this morning with the Secretary of State there, we actually don't even have to vote in this new we don't have to hold hearings. Now, our person on the ground there, Terry Manperl, asked, do you have a single case of fraud of someone coming in from out of state and registering? Do you have one case? This is going to knock out thousands of new voters. Do you have one case of fraud that backs this up? She got no answer. They said, we don't have to have a hearing. We don't have to answer questions because the Attorney General, a Republican, has now said we can simply implement this rule. We don't even have to have a vote on it. It's really serious stuff, and they're sneaking it in without notice. That's why I'm shouting about it on your program. Please, I'm still telling people, if you're not registered, please check your registration, even if you think you are in Georgia. Cutoff is December 7th. And please do it now, because if you have to go through a confirmation process, my friends, you're going to miss January 5.
Yeah, and an easy way to check your registration is to go to iwillvote.com. That's the website that the Democratic Party put up that, plug in your Georgia zip code and it'll take you right to the Secretary of State's office. But are there other sites, Greg? I'm assuming you have information over at gregpalace.com.
Yes, at gregpalace.com. And we have, of course, the site that was launched by Leo DiCaprio, savemyvote.org. Savemyvote.org. And you can look up if you're on the Georgia purge list, but it has a link straight to the Secretary of State's office to re-register if you've been removed from the voter rolls. That's our first concern, to go straight to the Secretary of State's office on that link to register if you're not registered. I'm telling you, especially if you are a student, now we know if you don't have a car, you better be checking your registration or registering right now.
But if you don't have a car, and like your daughter, she doesn't have a car, yeah, and she's got a New York driver's license, even though she lives 9 months out of the year in Georgia, which qualifies you for residence because she's going to college.
Yes. She fought and won and voted. Yes.
Right, over the next 2 weeks, Stacey Abrams is trying to sign up as many people as possible. Are any of them going to be able to vote? Greg, we got about 20 seconds.
You're going to have to fight for that vote. It's up to each county whether they're going to block you. I'm very, very concerned about this. So we don't know yet, but I'm on the phone with the lawyers, and we're not going to be silent about this.
Yeah, good idea. Good. Greg Palace, you can read all about it at gregpalace.com. Yeah, check out his latest book, too, How Trump Stole 2020. Greg, always great talking with you. Thank you so much for dropping by.
Thanks, Tom. Bye.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Thoughts on the Republican Party from me to you coming up next. Stick around. And then, of course, in our second hour, Congressman Ro Khanna for the whole hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
in our third hour, QAnon and other cult conspiracies, the whole lot. It's going to be an interesting day. Stick around. And welcome back, Jim, in Long Beach, California. Hey, Jim, thanks for listening to KPFK. What's up?
Hey, good morning. Love having Greg Pallas come on time, right, with the information we need. That's really my question of for you is how we, outside of Georgia, where I guess millions and millions of dollars are pouring in, can help in the situation there, too. And it looks like, you know, the game is very, very rigged. The mm-hmm. issue of issues, counting the vote, is still in the air. So how can we see very many sites asking for money, but you never know if they're actually going to deliver, right. You know?
What I can tell you what I did, Jim. You know, I contacted my member of the House and both of my senators and, you know, by email and said, I think this is outrageous. I'll tweet this this afternoon once we've got the Greg, you know, once Greg's piece goes up, I'll tweet it to them as well. You know, you could also do that on their Facebook pages on social media. Sometimes that'll actually get a better ding than even an email. I went to Fair Vote. I think it is. Hang on just a minute. Let me just, before I give a URL out, I just want to double check it. I'm pretty sure Stacey Abrams' organization is Fair Vote, and they had a thing where you could make a contribution that it went three ways. Fairvote.org. One third of it went to Fair Vote. One third went to Warnock, and one third went to John Ossoff. Yeah. So
that's what I'm.
So you know, and I thought that was great. I mean, I'm a huge supporter of Stacey Abrams. You know, whatever her next political adventure may be, I'm there. Her organization, Fair Vote, is all about registering people to vote in Georgia, and they're gonna need money for lawyers' fees and things like that. And then of course, you've got you know, some good candidates down there. So that's what's up on my mind. I got to run. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks to Greg.
I'll pass it along. Thanks a lot, Bill. Jim, excuse me. Good to hear from you. Bill in St. Helens, Oregon. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, Joe, a little off. First off, on the voting thing, I have to do this. On the Help America Vote Act, why didn't they just make a condition in there that every state had to ask on their registration if you had been previously registered in another state? What a concept. Yes, I was. California. Okay, we will notify California to remove you from the voter roll. Sorry, totally off my point. I think someone needs to remind the Joint Chiefs, the American people, the Congress, and Donald Trump that he has no constitutional authority to unilaterally start a war. None. Any order given by Trump to start a war, null and void. It's the duty of the Joint Chiefs to just say, we're not going to do that, Donnie boy, okay? And the authorized use of military force, Tom, that was a constitutional obscenity. That was without force. Null and void at inception. Every member of Congress that voted for that violated the constitutional oath, and George Bush killed two countries. Okay, that's it.
Yeah. No, I agree, Bill, and I think that this whole idea of authorizations to use military force as if they're not declarations of war and therefore don't fall under the constitutional provisions that require, you know, war to be declared by Congress, not by the president, are obscene. I'm with you. That's a good word for it. Bill, thank you for the call. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 20 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, exposing the con in conservatives. Stick around. We'll be right back. Share the Tom Hartman Program with your friends. We're available on SiriusXM, Free Speech TV, Pacifica, commercial stations nationwide, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, on the Tom Hartman app, and you can even tell your smart speaker to listen to the Tom Hartman Program. So John Kasich was recently on CNN talking about how Democrats need to be listening to rural America. Words to that effect. No, I think Democrats need to be talking to rural America and reminding rural America that it was a Democratic president that got them Social Security. It was a Democratic president that brought electricity to rural America, the RTA through, or the REA, rather through the Franklin Roosevelt administration. It was the Democratic Party who brought phones to rural America. It was the Democratic Party that brought Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and public education to rural America, subsidized all those things. Democrats don't need to be listening to rural America. They need to be talking to rural America. There is over 1,500 right-wing radio stations in rural America talking smack all the time, 24/7, and none in rural America carrying a progressive message. That's what Democrats need to be paying attention to. You can check out our new video on this over at TomHartmann.com. And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. I just want to lay this out. I mean, this is just becoming so obvious, I think, to most Americans that the Republican Party is not a legitimate party. It's not a legitimate political party and hasn't been for some time. That it's essentially a cult. And it's a cult that stands for one thing: the privilege and power of white men. Over the last 40 years, they developed all these bizarre and Byzantine rules to prevent low-income whites and people of color from voting. You know, like Greg was just telling us about in Georgia. Oh, you don't have a car registered here in Georgia? Well, we'll just hold on to your voter registration until after the January 5th election, and then we'll have a hearing about whether or not we're going to let you vote in Georgia. Right? And now they're trying to throw out ballots in Detroit, majority black city, Philadelphia, a large, you know, large black population. I'm not sure if, I don't think it's majority black. Atlanta, majority black city, I believe. It's just like, hey, let's pick these places where there's lots of people of color and just blow out their votes. I mean, they have been doing this for decades at both the state and the federal level. And it isn't just that. They've also been working aggressively to prevent women from having access to birth control, to prevent women from having access to women's health services, and to prevent women from having access to safe legal abortions. And you know, they've turned this male supremacy thing into a religion. And of course, as a religion, it's being promoted by the religious hucksters out there as well. You know, when the coronavirus hit, most of the developed countries in the world started making direct payments to workers. Just going around the companies and just saying, okay, how much was this person making? Well, we'll write a check to them up to a certain amount. And, you know, so unemployed people could continue to get by. Norway, for example, right now has an unemployment rate of 2%. There's a lot of people who aren't working. They're getting their paychecks from the government. The economy in Norway is actually growing right now. Of course, they've also got the coronavirus largely under control. But anyhow, here in the United States, we tried this with the CARES Act. Hey, let's give everybody $600 a week. And the Republicans were like, well, we'll go along with that. We'll give you know, working people $600 a week for 2-3 months. But you've got to give the fat cats, the billionaires, you know, the Mitt Romney level rich guys, the really, really, really rich guys, the Kelly Loeffler, multi-millionaire Kelly Loeffler flying back and forth from Georgia to Washington, D.C. in her own $25 million private plane. You thought having a Tesla was a status symbol, right? We want to make sure that they get giant tax breaks and huge subsidies that don't just expire in 3 months like the $600 a week does, but that last forever. Forever. And the taxes on average working people will start going up next year. And they got it in the law. There it is. Fat cats and big corporations making out like bandits. Average working Americans screwed. The Republicans have worked for years to gut workers' rights, to destroy labor unions, and to hold the minimum wage below starvation levels. They put the profits of polluting corporations above the rights of average Americans to have clean air, pure water, and a safe food supply. They fight to help monopolies and giant corporations control market share while wiping out small and medium-sized businesses across dozens of sectors. They're working as hard as they can right now to destroy America's national parks and wild areas so that their fossil fuel donors can extract more profits from land that was put in trust for all of us, in some cases, more than a century ago by Teddy Roosevelt. They're openly promoting lies about global warming to help those same fossil fuel donors at the expense of a possibly civilization-ending environmental catastrophe. They have supported a president who lied about masks and other common-sense public health measures while the wealthy and the billionaire class are living in their gated private mansions with, you know, live-in bubbled staff, and when they have to travel, they use, like Kelly Loeffler does, they use their own personal private jets. Their campaigns and slogans that have openly targeted people of color for over a century include law and order, save our heritage, our Confederate statues and military base names. Trump is willing to go to the mat on this one, you know, blowing up the defense budget just to keep the names of Confederate traitor generals on military bases. And jobs, not mobs. Yeah, this is, you know, from Nixon's Southern strategy to Trump's birtherism. That's the Republican Party. Hating on black people has been their pole star. And then, you know, illegal immigration, quote, the majority of the people in this country, even from Mexico, who are here without documentation, did not sneak across the Rio Grande River. They came across a border crossing in Tijuana or Juarez or El Paso or whatever, like they were coming in here to shop for groceries for the day, and they just never went home. But Trump's got to have his racist wall to prove his racist bona fides, right? And he's built 3 whole miles of it. Yes, they've renovated, you know, over 100 miles, but they're always doing that. You can't name a single piece of legislation that Republicans have put into place for the average American in the last 40 years. Instead, they're trying to gut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And now they're openly embracing Nazis, religious fanatics, and conspiracy theorists. The Republican Party is no longer a party.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is Moving Forward by Karine Jean-Pierre. This is from the introduction, Coming to America. I carry something special in my wallet. My cousin, Jeanette Pierre, gave it to me before my first day working for President Barack Obama in the White House. Remember this, he asked, as he handed me an old snapshot, the corners creased, the colors washed out. I gasped. I had forgotten the trip our extended family, me and my cousins, had taken to Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1982, just before I turned 8. There we were, seated on the base of the railing in front of the south lawn of the White House, with the Truman balcony in the far background. Jeanette gave me the photo to remind me of the pride my family takes in my success, of all of the people in the Haitian American community I carry on my shoulders. I kept that photo with me from then on. Every day when I got money out of that wallet for a cup of tea or a bagel at the cafeteria in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building in Washington, D.C., I couldn't help but glance at the image of that timid, skinny young girl sandwiched between my much older cousins. Back then, I was so shy that the nuns who taught kindergarten at my Catholic school called my mother in to say that they were worried about me. She doesn't play with other children, they said. She just keeps to herself. Over the years, I worked hard to overcome that. You've made us all proud, Jeanette told me. Code for how unlikely it was, inconceivable, really, that anyone from our family could get to the White House. My Haitian-American father and mother, a New York City taxi driver and a home health care aide, didn't closely follow American politics. They were more likely to discuss the viciously oppressive dictator dynasty of François Papa-Doc Duvalier and his son Jean-Claude Baby-Doc Duvalier, who ruled Haiti from 1957 to 1986, than any American president. Like many immigrants, they came here to find a better life for their children. I was proof that their struggle had been worth it. As an openly gay woman of color, I have also had my own struggles entering the world of politics, which even now can feel like a boys' club. Despite the record number of women who ran and won in the 2018 U.S. midterm elections, women occupy less than 23% of the seats in Congress, even though more than half of the population
is women. But when I was in the White House, I was usually too busy to think about how I had gone from being that meek schoolgirl with braids to the confident woman in a crisp tailored pantsuit who worked as Obama's regional political director in the Office of Political Affairs. I was the eyes and ears of the President of the United States in 12 northeastern states, from Maryland to Maine. The Political Affairs Wing has three offices and a corner on the first floor of the EEOB. The Eisenhower Executive Office Building is a beautiful historic building close to the White House's West Wing. The West Wing is home to the Oval Office where the U.S. President works. The first time I flashed my security clearance badge to the sharply dressed Marine standing guard at the double door entrance and walked into the West Wing, I remember looking around and thinking, this is so small. It looks so much bigger on TV. As a campaign operative for Senator John Edwards in 2007 and 8, I binge-watched the NBC 1999 to 2006 series starring Martin Sheen as a fictional American president named Josiah Bartlett. Still, it's hard not to be awed. I also felt a constant sense of responsibility because I was a black woman working for the first black American president. When you work at the White House, whether it's for a Democrat or a Republican, you have to put in a 12 to 15 hour workday or more. There's a reason why most people don't last a whole four-year term, and under President Donald Trump, turnover among his staff has occurred at an historically high rate. It's an absolute joy, but it's also a heavy lift. I like to get there between 7 and 7:30 in the morning to prepare for our first meeting at 9 o'clock, and I rarely left before 9 p.m. I would go home to my furnished basement apartment in a semi-sketchy part of town in northeast Washington. I had taken a pay cut to work in the White House. My place was cold, dark, and dreary, but I knew I didn't need more than a place to crash. A good night's sleep was never a given. There were plenty of times that my boss emailed me at 1 or 2 in the morning expecting me to get back to him ASAP, and I did. In those days, I walked around with a BlackBerry phone, the preferred device for politicos for White House work in one hand, and on the other hand, another BlackBerry issued by the Democratic National Committee for political work. Taxpayers did not pay for President Obama to do fundraisers or other political events, so having different phones for different purposes kept us honest and out of trouble. Because I was so intent on doing things the right way, I even carried a third phone, a personal one, in my pants pocket for calls and emails with family and friends. This was not a requirement. I just wanted to be extra mindful. The stakes were too big to make a mistake. The pressure was high. But I was proud of my role and wouldn't hide it. When phone number 3 rang and I would tell the person on the other end I had just gotten off Air Force One of the president or I was about to make a trip with Vice President Joe Biden on Air Force Two, they would say, Corrine, listen to you. You don't even realize how cool your job is. Getting involved in politics can be intimidating. If you weren't participating in a debate club or Young Democrats of America or Model United Nations by the time you finished high school, I know it can feel like you have no choice in politics. That's why I'm writing this book. I am proof that that's not true. I was a late bloomer. You hear stories about folks whose passions and talents were already obvious by the time they were in kindergarten. I am not like that. I first ran for office at Columbia University, and I wasn't drawn to a career in politics until after graduate school. Just how little did my family discuss American politics growing up? Meet Michael Dukakis. The first time I encountered politics was late on a Thursday night in July 1988. I was 13 years old. My sister Esther was 6 and my brother Daniel 4. My siblings and I were curled up on my parents' queen-size bed watching the television that sat in the corner of my mother's wooden vanity dresser. Moving Forward by Corrine Jean-Pierre.
On this week's Science Revolution, why are the Republicans saying the mask mandate is anti-freedom? If you're hooked up to a ventilator and you can't breathe, you're not free. The Republican idea of freedom is literally killing us. Nick Dearden with Global Justice Now joins me to ask who should own the COVID vaccine that was funded by We the People. Plus, Teresa Brown, RN, author of Critical Care, drops in to explain why the COVID task force needs nurses. There's a lack of nursing representation despite their essential and visible role on the front line of this national pandemic, and that needs to be fixed ASAP. Tune into the Science Revolution wherever fine podcasts are available. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Even the vaccine czar, right? I mean, this is how bizarre it gets. They wanted to hire a guy to be the vaccine czar who was going to, like, you know, oversee all this stuff, you know, with regard to the vaccine. Moncef Salawi is the name. He's the top, one of the top scientists, Operation Warp Speed. But he's on the board of directors of Moderna, you know, which is taking a lot of money to develop a vaccine and has come out with one of these two. And so they said, you know, if you want to be on this vaccine board, you got to share, you've got to sell your stock so you don't have an obvious conflict of interest. And he said, well, I'm not willing to do that. And they said, okay, cool. We'll make you a contractor rather than a government employee. So you don't, you know, the conflict of interest laws won't apply to you. So if they're just saying to one of their grifters, hey, come on in and just participate in our grift and we'll let you keep getting rich. How much money do you think that the Trump crime family is making off inside information? Because, you know, if you're the vaccine czar, you can certainly make a fortune on inside information. We know Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue did this, you know, selling stock when they heard that the economy was going to tank, buying stock for companies like Citrix, which makes the GoToMyPC product that people use for remote office work, you know, buying stock in Netflix because people are going to be home more, you know, buying stock. I mean, you know, it's like grift is like the official religion of the Republican Party. Anyhow, let's pick up some of your phone calls here. Daryl in Danville, New Jersey. Hey, Daryl, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Great. What's up?
Yeah, I actually joined Parler because so many of these, you know, right-wingers are moving from Twitter to Parler so they can engage in disinformation with impunity. And I'm telling you, Tom, it is a cult, and we are going to be in the middle of a serious mental health crisis pretty soon.
You think we're not already?
Well, I think what we have is people who are living in an alternative reality, but they don't realize they're living in an alternative reality because they're being told that, you know, every time there's some negative news on Trump, they say, don't listen to this. Don't watch this news network. Do not read this this newspaper. Do not listen to this pundit. And basically, they're limiting their information flow to OAN, Newsmax, Breitbart, and a bunch of websites that you've never heard of that just sort of popped up out of nowhere. And it's really to watch them and to engage with them as they twist themselves into knots to sort of explain away, you know, all of this negative news on the Trump campaign's effort to overturn this election is really sad in a way. It's like, you know, we don't allow drugs near schools for a reason, right? We don't say, well, let the kids take drugs. We don't allow this because kids are not young enough, I mean, or are not old enough to be able to make good decisions. So we don't let drugs near schools. These people are like, and I don't say this to be elitist, but a lot of these people are simple people with very little education, with very little intellectual curiosity. And so allowing this sort of crazy information flow to these is like giving drugs to children. And it's, I mean,
well, it's not just allowing, Daryl. There, it's being promoted. I mean, this is a website, or Parler is an app. I've downloaded the app, but I did, you know, when I went to sign up, you know, they want your phone number and your email address and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, I don't want to give that to the Mercer family. Well, maybe I'll decide to later this afternoon. You've piqued my curiosity, but
I created a Google Voice number.
Oh, well, that's an interesting way to do it. I was thinking of just putting in a phony phone number, you know, 555-1212 or something like that. But you know, we'll see. They may not accept that. I don't know. Maybe there's a way of did they validate your membership through your phone? Was that their way of confirming
they,
it?
They did. They did.
And getting permission to text
you. And I
used
my Google. Yeah, and I use my Google Voice to respond, and so my account is validated. But these people are crazier than you know. I mean, we know that they're crazy because, you know, they still believe that Trump won this election by a, not just that he won the election, they believe he won the election by a landslide. And right. And so well, this, the psychotic, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Daryl, we're going to, you know, the third hour of the show is going to be all about that. And I do, I need to get other people in here and give other folks a chance to weigh in. But thank you for the information.
Oh, it's great to hear from you. Right,
and I appreciate that. Richard in Aiken, South Carolina. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Yes, my question is about, since we have a runoff in Georgia, shouldn't the contest be between the people who voted for either candidates and are already registered, as opposed to suddenly having a flood of new registrations?
Why? Why? Richard, why would you object to any legal voter, any person in Georgia who is of legal voting age and is a citizen in the United States from voting in any election?
Why wouldn't they have voted in the regular election?
Maybe they just
You're
turned 18. Maybe they didn't get around to it. Maybe they couldn't get a day off work. There's a thousand reasons people don't vote, but it's none of your business or mine. It's none of our damn business, Richard. You know, why somebody didn't vote. The fact of the matter is either voting is a right in this country or it's not. And, you know, we give a lot of lip service to it being a right. And if we're going to continue giving lip service to that, you can't say, oh, you can't vote in this election because you didn't vote in the last one. That's the kind of stuff they do in Russia and Hungary.
I'm not saying that exactly. I'm saying that there was a contest voting on November 3rd, and the people who participated in that should be participating in the runoff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I get your opinion. I respectfully disagree, but thank you, Richard, for your contribution to the discussion. Carrie in Springfield, Missouri. Hey, Carrie, what's up?
Hey. My question is that provided there's a Biden administration and the attempted Trump coup doesn't work, is there going to be any initiative or push towards abolishing the Electoral College?
That, you know, there's two ways to abolish the Electoral College. The first is by a constitutional amendment. And in 1977, the House of Representatives was three votes short of making that happen. It would have passed the Senate. And, which is pretty amazing. I mean, it was a totally bipartisan thing. Everybody was like, hey, this thing has been around for 240 years. It was originally put into place largely because it could take a week for news to travel from the remote states, you know, from northern New Hampshire or southern Georgia to Washington, D.C. And so, you know, we'll just have people send their representatives basically to vote for the president and, you know, their trusted wise elders. That was the whole idea. You know, within 40 years, it was completely unnecessary. And in 1977, there was this broad
sort of
consensus
thing, too, right?
Well, it worked to the benefit of some of the southern states, largely because of the three-fifths compromise. But, the real reason for it was, you know, Alexander Hamilton lays it out in the Federalist Papers, I think it's number 54, where he talks about how, you know, if you're in a remote area, there's no way that you can ever meet or get to know a politician running for president. You could do that with a governor or with a county executive or a mayor, but not the guy running for president. So instead, you vote for a person that you trust, a trusted member of the community who has never been elected to public office, who has therefore has no dog in the fight and is not a member of a political party. I mean, that's right there in the Constitution, not the party part, because they didn't have parties at the time, but they've never been elected to public office. And that person will go to Washington, D.C., and as Alexander Hamilton laid out, determine if the candidate, you know, who the state sent them to vote for is a man of, quote, low moral character. And if so, then they can vote for the other guy. That was the whole idea of it. Well, in 1977, we said, this is crazy. So, number one, constitutional amendment. That ain't going to happen now because the Republicans are in love with the Electoral College because it's the only way George Bush became president. Al Gore actually won 500,000 more votes in the national vote. And it's the only way Donald Trump became president.
Right.
Hillary Clinton won 3 million votes. The other way to do it is to get enough states to represent 270 electoral votes to sign on to this interstate compact. It's called the NationalPopularVote.com compact. And you can get all the information, Carrie, at NationalPopularVote.com. and be sure that you get the .com. And lobby your state. I don't know if Missouri is a member of the compact or not, but they need about, I think they need something on the order of around 80 more electoral votes, you know, states representing that more, many more votes to make it work. Carrie,
you're
thanks.
Listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls in just a moment, and Congressman Ro Khanna, of course, will be with us the entire next hour. Stick around. And welcome back. Omar in Herndon, Virginia. Hey, Omar, what's on your mind today?
Tom, good day to you, sir, and your teammates. Didn't Richard Byrd was also arrested for insider trading because he went against Trump?
I don't know who he is.
He's the chairman of the Intelligence Committee from North Carolina.
Richard Burr, B-U-R-R. Sorry, I thought you said Burr.
Yes.
He was not arrested. He was simply outed, basically. But he has not suffered any consequences from that.
Yeah, and that was just to prove your point that Purdue and the other lady was engaged in insider trading and nothing happened to them. And then the other person, you know, who went against Trump absolutely was outed. But what I wanted to ask you, Tom, is this Trumpism, I mean, is it going to stay after Trump leaves? Is Tom Cotton is going to pick up where Trump left off? I know you said probably he's going to be the next Trump. Well, what's going to happen to Trumpism? This thing that Trump tapped into and brought to the surface.
Yeah. I don't have a crystal ball, Omar, but my sense is that Trump got, you know, he got 70 some odd million people to vote for him. And, you know, which is not any small accomplishment. I'm guessing that probably at least half of those people who voted for him because they like his racism. They like his xenophobia. They like his misogyny, his white supremacy, his male supremacy. I mean, and the other half who voted for him just, you know, always vote for Republicans because, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, they listen to right-wing talk radio, or they just you know, have this identity, you know, NASCAR Republican kind of thing. But, you know, typically racism goes hand in hand with that, you know, with all the Confederate memorabilia and everything else.
I agree with you.
My guess is that Trump is, you know, Trump 3 weeks ago rolled out this brand new pack called the Save America Pack. And that pack, I'm getting, again, overnight, I mean, in the last 24 hours, I've gotten at least 8 fundraising requests from Donald Trump, from Rudy Giuliani, from the president of the RNC, Rona McDaniel, Romney McDaniel, Mitt Romney's niece. I'm getting all these, you know, emails begging me for money. And when I click on them, 100% of the time, they go to 60% of the money goes to the Save America PAC, 40% goes to the RNC, no matter what they say they're for. They say they're to recount the vote, or they say they're to pay for lawyers, or they say they're to defend your right to vote, or they say they're to push back on the fake news. I mean, it's always a different excuse or reason or battle that we're fighting on your behalf, Tom or Fred, as the case may be. But when you click on it, what you see is that the money's actually going to Donald Trump. And he's got what's called a leadership pack, which means he can use that money for pretty much, you know, about half his living expenses. And he can also use that money to buy politicians. He can just pass that money along to politicians that he wants to support or help. This is how Mitch McConnell controls the Senate. Is he has a leadership pack like this. It brings in tens of millions of dollars a year, and then he redistributes that money to Republican senators based on how they're voting and whether they're voting with him and all that kind of stuff. It's like old machine politics. It's like this giant bribery scam. But there's no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump has figured out he can make more money in politics than in real estate, and so he's going to stay in politics. The question is, how many people are going to follow him? So, and I don't think anybody knows the answer to that, Omar. Omar, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. I'm speaking at the Bioneers 2020 conference. It's running December 5th and 6th and 12th and 13th. My keynote is how all life is organized around democracy. Tickets are available at Bioneers.org, and there's a 20% discount with the code TOM, T-H-O-M.
So for our Tom Hartman insider videotape YouTube, whatever you want to call it, private video that's available over at TomHartman.com, I'm talking this week about Donald Trump just completely giving in to Erdogan of Turkey, the president of Turkey, the dictator of Turkey now, and this theory that Jared Kushner okayed the killing, at least the capture, perhaps the killing of Jamal Khashoggi and to Mohammed bin Salman, and that Erdogan has the tape of it, and that when he called up Donald Trump a couple weeks ago and said, I want you to pull out of Syria and give me those Kurds so I can kill them and take that land, that he did it because Erdogan threatened him. And then Erdogan comes to the United States, a week or two later and gets a whole state dinner thing. Check it all out. It's over at TomHartman.com. I think you'll find it fascinating. Welcome back. Justin in Summit Hill, Pennsylvania. Hey, Justin, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? I've been listening to all this stuff about Kelly Loeffler and doing all these crimes and that sort of stuff. Why don't we start calling the Republicans exactly what they do? Because they always call us communists and that sort of stuff. Why don't we call them corporate communists? Because that's all they seem to do is put up things for corporations and for themselves. I mean, it would be an easy contest to toss back at them because, I mean, that's just the truth. I mean,
there's another and better word that describes corporate rule. Benito Mussolini, back in the late 1920s, invented this word, and he said it was the merger of corporate and state interests. He said it could better be known as corporatism, but he liked his new word, and it was based on the bundle of sticks with an axe sticking in the top of it with a rope wrapped around it, which was the symbol of the Roman Empire for 1,000 years or however long it was, hundreds of years. And the idea was one stick you can break, but if you have a bundle of sticks tied together, you can't break that. And that bundle of sticks, which, by the way, is carved into the speaker's podium in the House of Representatives, that bundle of sticks is called a fasce. F-A-S-C-H-E, or A-E, or however you spell it, yeah. And so what he did was he created this political and economic system named after the ancient Roman fasce. He called it fascism, and he said it's when corporations and the state work together to their mutual interest. And so rather than calling these guys communists, I think calling them fascists is the appropriate thing to do. Henry Wallace, the vice president under Franklin Roosevelt, called them fascists in the New York Times repeatedly.
Well, here's the thing, because their trigger word is communist and that sort of stuff. So if we use the corporate communist, it just makes it worse, because the fact is that it's not communist for the people, but it's communist for the high rich businesses and that sort of stuff. So we use their own jargon against them and basically flutter them. Not only that, but also point out the fact that Loeffler and Purdue are numbnuts that are nothing but thieves. I mean, yeah,
there you go. It's an idea, Justin. It's an idea. Thank you very much for sharing that. It's a good one. Paula in Miami. Hey, Paula, what's up? Oh, you're waiting for Ro Khanna? For Congressman Khanna?
Well,
I can put you back on hold.
It was about the post office, so I don't know if he can help, if there's some recourse.
Well, let me put you on hold, and you can ask him, when he comes up. It'll just be about 10 minutes from now, so I'm going to stick you back on hold. Craig in Half Moon Bay, California. Hey, Craig, what's up?
Good morning, Barney. I called you 2 weeks ago, and we got a bunch of responses, and I wanted to answer their questions and your objections to blockchain voting versus mail voting. There were only three things they brought up and something you brought up, and I want full disclosure. I am an expert at this. I have a patent in AI encryption and attack detection. I've written a lot of software. So may I proceed with three objections and questions they brought up and you brought up?
You may have 60 seconds, Craig.
Thank you. The first one was you saying mail-in ballots are great. And I said, well, we have an honest Governor Newsom who mailed one to me that I never got, thanks to DeJoy. And so I suggest there should be another alternative for people to vote safely at home with a phone or a tablet. One of your callers said, well, what if I don't have a phone or a laptop? And I don't know anybody in America who doesn't know somebody with a phone or a laptop. And the third thing was something you brought up about security. The military uses a system called VOET, V-O-E-T-Z or something, when they're overseas. And there's another one called VOETtool.org. It's open source. And I just believe that with open source and, as Edward Snowden said, end-to-end encryption, you are secure. You're able to vote safely at home. And that caller you had earlier, Richard, who said people shouldn't vote because of some reason. I think when you turn 18, like you said, and you're a citizen, everybody should be allowed to vote. Felons, too, but yeah. That's my own opinion.
Yeah. I'm with you. Craig, I'm guessing that probably within 5 years or so, you know, what you're envisioning will be. But right now, my default is paper. And paper through the mail works really, really well. Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Been a while. Last week, you had a rant on fleecing, the Republican Party fleecing the states. Basically, it was about, I live in a red state, and I'm going to use that point of view, that in Iowa we give about 80% of the federal taxes we pay comes back to Iowa. And it's similar to that, or a little bit less than that, in Nebraska, similar to that of California and New York. Now, but I'm in a Republican state, a red state, and it's Republicans that are being fleeced by this, giving this 20% to states that are in the rears, like Mississippi, Kentucky, and stuff like that. Yeah. So you touched my heart with this rant. The point I wanted to make was you fell short one step. That is redistribution of wealth. That is an antitrust issue with the Republican Party. So here it is, Republicans being fleeced by Republicans, and the Republican senators and Democrats are not coming home and being straight with their voting public.
You got it, Randy. And they're redistributing wealth. Oh, my God. Thank you, Randy.
This is the Tom Hartman program. Continues on all news and talk channel HD3, which you can hear online at WMNF.org or listen to your smart speaker. Tomorrow, Mark Biro will be in on Midpoint. And so stay tuned for NPR News and Franco Silva. He'll be up with Latino 54 coming up in the news on our main channel.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. I was lying in a burned out basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for replacement when the sun burst through the sky.
And this is WMNF Tampa 88.5 on the left side of your dial. Best little radio station on planet Earth. Stay tuned for NPR News, and then Franco Silva's here for Latino 54.